Are you looking for information to help your indoor environment be the safest space available for you and your family? If you are, then you've come to the right place. My name is Mike McNatt, and this is the Indoor Environmental Safe Space Podcast. Today, I want to talk about my view of theoretical changes that need to be made in the indoor environmental profession and how we need to be closely mirroring the medical professions. Let me explain that a little bit, that, you know, in medicine, they have a very well-defined process and they believe in certain concepts like triage and standards of care that are much more well-practiced and defined than they are in indoor environmental professions. But when we take a look at the two professions, I'm always telling clients that the doctor heals the body, heals the person. The indoor environmental professional is responsible for helping heal the home. You cannot get a healthy individual that is going to be healed by a doctor to stay healthy if they're going to keep returning to a sick home. The first step in a medical practice is diagnosis. You know, a lot of folks will call me up and say, "Hey, Mike, I think I have a mold problem. How much will it take to fix that mold problem?" My response is typically, "Well, how do you know it's a mold problem?" And they say, "Well, I see the mold underneath the kitchen sink." Okay, that could be contributing to a host of problems, and that may be the most significant problem and the one that needs to be addressed first. But let's go through a process of proper diagnosis. Proper diagnosis accomplishes two things. It makes sure that the work you need to have done and is done properly, but it also makes sure that a bunch of work that isn't needed to be done isn't done. To give you an example, I once got a call on a Wednesday night from a customer about 6 p.m. It was a potential client, and the client said, "Mike, I would like for you to come out and take a look at a moldy area and give me an estimate on what it'll take to clean it up." And at that point, I owned a remediation company, so I didn't do the consulting and the testing like I do now. I did the cleanup and the corrective measures. So she had asked me to come out to give her an estimate. Unfortunately, I was just booked up. I already had things planned for that evening, and I was booked up for the next day, which was a Thursday. And I ended up having to tell her, "Hey, I can be out there in 2 days. She said, "I've already got people coming out to give me an estimate, so don't worry about it. If I need you to come out, I'll call you back and let you know." So Friday night rolls around, and it's about 6:30, 7 o'clock p.m., and my phone rings. And I recognize this lady's voice, and she is in an absolute panic. And she said, "Mike, I should have asked you to come out. I need you to come out tonight." And I said, "Well, hang on, what's going on? You know, I can definitely tell you're distraught. What's happening right now?" And she said that another company came out to give her an estimate, and they convinced her that she definitely had a big mold problem, that the mold had spread throughout her house, mycotoxins were poisoning her home, and that she now had to have everything decontaminated in the house. And they gave her a quote and had her sign a contract for $36,000. And they were going to get started immediately. Now, I am not a lawyer, nor am I a doctor, but I do know that there are some laws to protect customers against buyer's remorse and being pressured into signing a contract they didn't want to sign. So I told her to tell them to stop work, tell them that you want to consider it further, and that you'll call them on Monday to have them come back out and start if you choose to move forward, and then I'm coming over immediately. Went over to her house. She did have a mold problem. It was visible. It was obvious. It was about the size of a grapefruit. It was up in a hallway to an attic entrance. And I had no reason whatsoever to believe that it had cross-contaminated anything. So I told her I would provide her with an estimate to get rid of that spot, to do what I would think would be reasonably necessary, which is to probably HEPA vacuum and run some air scrubbers in the area where the mold was found and in the area immediately adjacent, which was her kid's playroom. So I said, you know, it's probably prudent to have the playroom taken care of. And it was right directly below HVAC return. So I said, a mold assessment consultant may want you to have the HVAC system cleaned. So I'll give you an estimate to do all three of those, and that'll be worst case scenario. I don't even know if he's going to want all three. It'll take some testing to see if they're necessary, but you're going to have worst case scenario. And my worst case scenario with HVAC cleaning, doing some cleanup of the upstairs, and taking care of the mold problem, building containment, passing clearance, the whole nine yards, was around $2,800. Needless to say, she was absolutely thrilled with that estimate and was wanting to know how quickly could we get started. But I had to stop and say, you've already been taken advantage of once. I don't want you to have any doubts as to what I'm telling you. So it's a requirement of state law, and it's my personal requirement that you hire a licensed mold assessment consultant that's independent of me 100%. You pick them off the internet or pick them out of the yellow pages, but find a qualified mold assessment consultant you have faith in, and you spend the money to have them come out and test this mold and confirm everything I'm telling you. They will be able to let you know if it's produced mycotoxins if you want them to. She went ahead and moved forward, hired the mold assessment consultant. I think she paid a total of about $800 to have the assessment done. It did identify that, yes, there was a mold problem. We were able to clean up the mold for her and take care of her problem. And, you know, after we finished cleaning up, and this is really why I got into the business, I do this because of what this lady told me after we cleaned her home and we achieved clearance. She called me up and said, Mike, I don't know how to thank you because we didn't have money put aside for mold, which nobody has money put aside for mold. You have money put aside for quality of life improvements, for vacations, time with your family, retirement, buying a bigger home. And a lot of us this day and age are even struggling to put together spare money at all. So sometimes we're just living paycheck to paycheck. But in her case, she had put some money back. And she said, we were cashing in my kids' college fund to be able to pay for this. We were stressing so badly over how we were going to replenish it if we were even going to be able to. So she had two beautiful little daughters, and they were planning on cashing in their college funds to make sure they had a home that was safe for those daughters to live in, which is not a bad decision, but if you don't need to, then don't do it. And in this case, hiring a mold assessment consultant and hiring a qualified professional mold remediation company saved them tens of thousands of dollars from a predatory company that was trying to take advantage of them. So basically, that's a story that just demonstrates how one company that didn't have their heart in the right place was just looking to take advantage of somebody. And there are companies in my field that just want to get into your pocketbook. And the deeper they can get, the more accomplished they feel. But anybody that is not in this field to help people and to help them become healthier and to help reunite families in the homes they want to be in, they just need to get out of the industry, flat out. But let's talk about the process that medical practitioners follow. The first step, it starts with fundamental diagnostics. You've got to be able to successfully diagnose the problems. And the assessors that come in with that air pump, and that's the only diagnostic tool they use, besides a flashlight shining around, well, that simply is not adequate. That doesn't do the trick, especially not for sensitized patients. A qualified, experienced mold assessment consultant will have a number of tools available to them. They'll have a number of testing strategies and methodologies in which they can employ to find the root of the problem. So proper diagnostics is key, and that means using tools like thermal hygrometers, which is a device that measures temperature and humidity, moisture meters, and you want to make sure that anybody using a moisture meter understands what a moisture meter is. A moisture meter is not a moisture meter. I'm going to repeat that. A moisture meter is not a moisture meter. It does not measure moisture. Why do they call it a moisture meter? That's because what people call it, and that's the way people recognize it. But a moisture meter actually measures electrical conductivity. So you take a product like wood, and you take all the moisture out of it. Wood is non-conductive. If you take all the moisture out, there's nothing to conduct electricity. If you add moisture into it and you can measure that conductivity, you can get an idea of how much moisture is in that wood. So it's real important when your professionals are using a moisture meter and they tell you this area down here is wet because it's reading a 76. Well, did they take dry standard samples? Did they go to an area that they presume is 100% dry and it's the same material to get a baseline of what dry looks like before they measured that area? Now, that's not always needed. You know, I'm going to be the first one to say, if you put a moisture meter up to an area and it pegs out at 99, or if it's a scale of 1 to 10 on a 9, 9.9 or a 10, and the light goes red and it starts beeping, Chances are there's moisture there or there's some conductive material. Keep in mind, if they're doing it around windows or they're doing it around corners, they could be detecting the metal corner trim. They could be detecting windowsills. So you can get a false positive. And I've seen this happen on a young assessment consultant who was in a home. He was metering around the windows and he was saying, "Oh my gosh, all these windows are leaking. We have to rip out every window in this house." And I told him, "Are you sure you're not picking up a conductive material like metal?" And he thought about it. And I said, "You need to pick an area where if there are corner beads that are getting too close, there are metal flashing, anything like that, you have to make sure you're hitting an area that's completely dry. Measure that and then see what you're measuring here. And not just use the non-invasive meter. There are some that will read from the surface in the material without penetrating. There's others that have little pins." I said, "Also, verify what you're saying with a thermal camera and with a pin." And he applied the pins, and lo and behold, he couldn't get the pins into the wall because he was hitting metal. So there are his wet readings. It was because of metal, not because of moisture. So they should also be employing tools like infrared cameras, UV light. UV light is a great way to tell if an area's had a leak before, because the minerals in water, when it dries, the minerals will leave an outline and will luminesce under UV light. But it has to be the right frequency of light. In my experience, and from what I've read, 365 nanometer wavelength is kind of the ideal for minerals and for biological material to luminesce. There you go to my competition. That's the light that I use, is a 365 nanometer light that is very, very bright, very powerful. So wear UV protective glasses when you use it. And if you want to put that in your arsenal, by all means, help more people become healthy with it, and we will all be better off. They should also be using infrared thermography, but make sure that they understand the thermography is just an indicator. If you see a blue area on a wall, which indicates maybe a cooler surface, it doesn't mean that cooling is caused by evaporation. That cooling could also be caused by a water pipe in the wall. It could be caused by a lack of insulation. It can be caused by a lot of things, an updraft. But the assumption that, "Oh, I see blue on an infrared camera, so I'm seeing water," is a way that you're going to get taken for a ride that you don't want to be taken on, because it's going to cost you a lot of money when there's no water there. I believe every assessment consultant should carry a laser particle counter. Now, a laser particle counter tells you across multiple bands of particle sizes how many particles are in the air. A laser particle counter can be valuable because if you're in one environment and you take a laser particle reading, like let's say, for example, outdoors, and then you come inside, which inside almost always is above outside, we bring a lot of things into our homes that create dust. And we live in our homes, and our homes are fairly tightly sealed, so dust just tends to build up. So unless we've taken precautions and put in mechanical systems to offset the generation of all this dust we create, and like I said in a previous podcast, the average human sheds about 1.5 grams of epithelial cells every day. So if you've got 2 adults and 3 children living in the home, well, just add those 3 children up and consider them another adult. You now have almost 4 grams of dead skin cells being created a day. And how much time are you spending in your home? Well, we spend most of our time indoors. And unfortunately, this day and age with the pandemic, a lot of us are spending all of our time in our homes. Well, you're getting quite a dust load built up in the home. Not to mention if you have pets, that just adds to it that much more. So a laser particle counter can help you determine where your high particle counts are. And again, if you get high particle counts, that can be an indicator that you've got some kind of biological growth going on that's adding to the particle count. Mold colonies love to produce spores, and those spores show up. So I usually look for rooms. I triangulate with it to find the room with the highest particle count and look at that potentially as ground zero. So it's just one investigative tool I use. Laser particle counter, infrared thermography, UV light. A device that not a lot of mold assessors carry that can be very helpful is a device called an ATP illuminator. ATP stands for adenosine triphosphate, and it is the molecule that stores energy out of the mitochondria of living cells. Any living substance is going to create ATP. This device measures ATP, This is a tool that's used by industrial hygienists to measure the sanitary status of surfaces in food prep places, in medical facilities, etc. So I can swab a surface and within 15 seconds get a reading as to how much biological matter is on that surface. That doesn't tell me whether it's viral or bacterial, but it does tell me there's a living substance there. Now, it doesn't tell me if there's any dead organic matter, which, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, well, Mike, the mold is dead, so it's not harmful. Is that right? And I tell them that's absolutely false. If you're allergic to cats, it doesn't matter whether the cat is dead or alive. You can't be around a dead cat. You can't be around a live cat. You're allergic to cats no matter what their living state is. So mold is the same way. And if mold has produced mycotoxins, the mycotoxins are on the alive mold. The mycotoxins are on the dead mold. The problem with dead mold is dead mold dries out. It flakes apart. It decomposes into tiny little fragments that go into the air much more readily because they're dried out. It's like a dead leaf. A dead leaf will blow around and stay in the air much longer than a green live leaf or one that's recently fallen from a tree, because the living leaf or the one that's recently fallen from the tree has all the moisture in it. It falls faster. Dead leaves fly around like feathers in the wind. So keep in mind, dead mold can be more harmful to the human system than live mold, in my opinion. Proper diagnosis. We'll wrap up this conversation on diagnosis with this thought. You don't want any indoor environmental professional or any remediation consultant trying to convince you of a diagnosis without evidence. In fact, there is no real diagnosis. There are only hypotheses, and the hypotheses are proven or not proven with data. Now, the data I use, again, we mentioned them, laser particle counters, thermal imagery, visual inspection, UV light inspection. I use a lot of laminar light to show imperfections in wood and swelling to help me identify sources of moisture. These are all tools I use to determine whether or not the probability of my hypothesis as being correct or being false. And most assessors will shine a light around and take some air samples. Well, that is grossly inadequate. It would be like if you went to a doctor and said, hey, I have a deep internal pain, and he looked in your eyes, looked in your ears, took your temperature and said, okay, I'm going to diagnose you with this. Well, if you have something going on deeper that's not visible, they'll want to conduct some blood work. They'll want to do some testing. And it's an iterative process, which may ultimately end up with them sending you to a specialist, which is the right thing to do. Be leery of any mold professional or any indoor environmental professional that stops short of employing a number of different strategies, a number of different tools, and the importance of developing a very logical testing strategy that that assessment consultant can explain to you. And they need to be able to tell you why they want to test, what it's going to tell them, and what it's going to help them decide that they wouldn't be able to decide without the test. Well, that concludes our podcast for today. If you found the information helpful, please support our podcast by selecting like below. And to stay informed as new episodes are posted, be sure and select subscribe below. If you have any questions or comments, be sure and post them below, or feel free to email us at info@iesafespace.com. Thanks for listening in. I'm Mike McNatt, and this is the Indoor Environmental Safe Space Podcast.